Next case, 20-8052 Garcia versus Wyoming Department of Health. And Mr. Phelan for the appellant, you may proceed. You may proceed. Mr. Phelan, he looks locked, Paul.
May it please me.
We're having a little trouble with the feed from Mr. Phelan.
Mr. Phelan, are you?
I'm here. I've unblocked my video and unmuted, I think.
We can now hear you. Go ahead and proceed. You were locked up for a second.
Sorry. The question today is whether or not the plaintiff was discharged for disability, unlawfully discharged. And the defendant, the appellee, has admitted as such. It admitted that the reason that Ms. Garcia was discharged was because of the post-report finding that she suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder. The question is whether or not she was otherwise a qualified individual with a disability, which is the definition of a person that can seek recovery on the basis of disability. The appellant contends that the defendant's sole reliance upon Dr. Post's report to determine that there was cause for discharge is a discrimination based upon disability unless that report is an individualized assessment of the ability of the employee to perform the job. The post report was defective in several ways, but the big one was that it did not consider the very substantial and successful job performance record of the employee, 24 years as a nurse and a year as a public health nurse with the Department of Health, with meets expectations, excellent job performance reviews. The fact that she has post-traumatic stress disorder, which causes certain behaviors to occur, such as expressing anger, having anxiety attacks, crying spells when criticized, is a part of having the disability. And under the law, the Disability Act, Rehabilitation Act, and the ADA protect both the disability and the behavior that results from the disability. The post report is an example of the use of the rational basis evaluation of an individual for a job, which is not permitted under the R line of cases, which was preceded by the Pushkin case of the 10th Circuit, where the 10th Circuit found that there should be an individualized assessment of a person's ability to perform the position and not simply comparing the description of the disability with the job requirements, the job description.
The department, Mr. Phelan, the department relied on the report, at least in part, to make its termination decision. Are you saying that it was not entitled to rely on that report as a basis for its decision?
I am saying that. It did rely upon it. It didn't question it at all. It just said that the post report said that she was disabled and that she was not fit for duty, did not consider that she was actually performing the job for several months adequately and with excellent job performance reviews, did not consider her past job performance as whether or not she was otherwise qualified for the position. The purpose of the disability laws, anti-discrimination disability laws, is to put people to work who have disabilities, not to ferret out those from the workforce who have disabilities that might be uncomfortable to people working around them.
You're saying that the decision then was pretextual by the department, and I just wonder how you get to pretext if the department went to the trouble to have an outside evaluation. It took some steps to take a look at her conditions, and doesn't that actually demonstrate a lack of intentional discrimination on the basis of a protected characteristic?
No, because the department was under a duty under the law to determine whether or not the individual was otherwise qualified for the position, and that would include an consideration of her job performance while she was working at the Department of Health and in other positions. It is the department can't simply delegate to a psychologist its responsibility to make an individualized assessment of a person's ability to perform a job. Looking at the post report, the department should have said, well, what about these job performance reviews that happened just a couple of weeks before you sent her, or a few weeks before you sent her to the fitness for duty evaluation? Did you consider those? Nothing in that report shows that the doctor considered those reports, or that evidence. So it was a flawed report that cannot be relied upon solely to meet the burden of the employer to make an individualized assessment.
Well, counsel, if we're looking at this from the standpoint of pretext, that is, if the department states that it made its decision in reliance on the report's conclusion that your client was unfit for duty, then I understand that it's your burden to show that that wasn't the real reason, that the director, Mr. Forslund, for some reason didn't actually rely on the report or didn't believe the report. And so even if the report can be criticized, isn't the real question whether Director Forslund relied on the report's conclusion to make the decision? And don't you have to show that isn't what he did?
We have to show that the department did not conduct an individualized assessment of the qualifications of the individual. One part of that would be a psychological evaluation and the underlying basis for that psychological investigation. If that evaluation overlooks or does not consider a job performance review that was timely and concurrent with the referral for the fitness for duty, then it is a defective, and the department is under a duty under the law not to simply refer this to Dr. Post or to any psychological evaluator, but to conduct an individualized assessment as to qualifications. Nothing in the Post report shows that that was considered by Dr. Post. Nothing in the record really shows that they considered the job performance evaluations by Mr. Forslund. Nothing in the record shows that individualized assessment was conducted by the department, which is the entity which is responsible for carrying out the anti-discrimination laws regarding disability. We are unable to depose Dr. Post, and we don't know why he didn't consider it. There is some evidence that he said, well, it wouldn't have mattered if I knew about it or not. But that is the question for a jury. Was this an individualized assessment of the abilities of the employee to perform the duties of the job? And we submit that a jury could find that simply relying upon that psychological evaluation is not sufficient to conduct an individualized assessment. It was a flawed report, subject to all kinds of defects, failure to investigate, those types of things that a jury could even determine in favor of
Mr. Phelan. So even if it were even if it were a flawed report, if the director honestly believed it, doesn't that show an absence of pretext?
Well, that shows an absence of effort on the part of the director to conduct that individualized assessment that which the law requires the employer to do.
If he thought he had conducted an adequate individualized assessment, even if it was flawed, does that still show an absence of pretext?
There's a absence of pretext. I think that his failure to the department's failure to review the record as to whether or not there's a individualized assessment is the discrimination. The pretext of that we may be talking about is the complaints that were made about Ms. Garcia regarding her behavior at the workplace, things that she had said, et cetera, which motivated them to refer her to a psychologist for evaluation. And what motivated them was a question of fact. We have evidence that there was a closeness in time between the time that Ms. Garcia said, I'm going to go to the EEOC or I'm going to file a civil rights complaint as a result of you calling me not normal and those types of things. And that might be and sending her to a job or a evaluation for fitness for duty may be motivated by discriminatory intent. But once we get to that point of whether or not she is fit for duty, that raises the question as whether or not we're discriminating on the basis of disability. So we have retaliation for advising the department that she was going to complain about discrimination and on the basis of race and religion, and because of the closest in time of making those complaints and being referred for job performance or job fitness for duty evaluation. But the fitness for duty evaluation was the reason for her termination. That's been admitted by the state all along, that the fitness for duty sort of absolves the state of any other duty to make an individualized assessment, make sure that Dr. Post had all the information, that he had the information given to this department by Ms. Garcia, her letters to Mr. Nix, the job performance reviews, all those things that the evaluators should have known about and should have considered. But without those things, report was flawed, should not have been relied upon, could not be relied upon because it was not an individualized assessment as required by the law.
Mr. Phelan, the complaint lists three claims, and not one of them mentions the Rehabilitation Act. And your cross motion for summary judgment addressed your ADA claims, but also doesn't mention the Rehabilitation Act. So why should we read the complaint to include Rehabilitation Act claims?
Well, made efforts in the first paragraph of the complaint to say that this case is brought pursuant to the Rehabilitation Act of 1973 and the ADA, the Americans with Disability Act of 1990. And we allege that there was discrimination on the basis of disability.
I guess where I'm having my problem is when you actually list your claims, you mention the ADA, but you don't mention the Rehabilitation Act.
Well, the Rehabilitation Act, Section 794D, I believe, provides that the standards to determine whether this section has been violated in a complaint alleging employment discrimination shall be the standards applied under Title I of the Americans with Disability Act of 1990, and then cites 42 U.S.C. 1211 et sec. So the Rehabilitation Act was sort of a test to see if these laws could make any difference. And as the time went on, it was determined that the protections of the Rehabilitation Act should be extended to the private sector. So the question was, is this the state under the Rehabilitation Act, or is it under the ADA? The ADA sets forth the standards. How do we determine whether or not there was discrimination under the Rehabilitation Act? So,
Counsel, I think I understand your argument. Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel. Your time's expired. Let's hear from the department, Mr. Howard.
May it please the court, Mr. Phelan. I want to address the issue of immunity first. In regards to immunity for Garcia's second claim for relief, which is only pled as a claim under the Americans with Disability Act, the state has not consented to suit. Congress has not abrogated the state's immunity, and the action was not brought against individual state officers. In addition, Garcia does not seek prospective relief. Garcia continues to allege here that this action was brought interchangeably with the Rehabilitation Act without any evidence of that claim actually appearing in the complaint. Appellant apparently asked this court to overturn its precedent in Levy, which already determined that the two acts, the ADA and the Rehabilitation Act, are not interchangeable. It's not sufficient for Garcia to argue that the pieces of the Rehabilitation Act claim are there. They're just not put together. The defendant does not control and cannot be subject to claims which could have existed or which might be hinted at, but are not adequately pled. Rather, the plaintiff should be bound by the causes of action raised in their pleadings and their own litigation decisions. For that reason, we ask that the district court's decision finding that the state had immunity against the plaintiff's ADA claim was proper and must be affirmed. To move on to plaintiff's argument about an individualized assessment, Pushkin addresses...
Well, counsel, just to be clear then, what about the Rehabilitation Act claims? Are you waiving sovereign immunity for those claims, or... Where are we with that?
We do concede in our brief that we do have, the state has some exposure to the Rehabilitation Act. Those facts and law were not, you know, thoroughly developed in this case, primarily because it was not pled that way. So that argument was not made express at the lower level. Though we do concede there is a possibility that we would be subject to a claim under the Rehabilitation Act because we do accept federal funds.
And the district court addressed the claims, and I take it that's where you're going next.
Correct. Yes, Your Honor, that's where I'm going next. And I would like to discuss appellant's argument about the individualized assessment. Pushkin mentions an individualized assessment performed by the court. But even if we are talking about an individualized assessment performed by the employer, by the department, appellant's argument both minimizes the department's efforts to mitigate some of the challenges that Ms. Garcia was having at work by meeting with her, by offering her support so we could finish. I'm sorry, was there a question? By minimizing their offers of support to help her finish her uncompleted charting, to work with her on providing her support, which she claimed that she needed. However, it's difficult for the department to imagine what an individualized assessment would look like if not an independent and thorough evaluation by a mental health professional.
Was there anything done to assess her beyond the post evaluation?
As far as her professional performance as discussed by the appellant,
her fitness for duty. She had been performing her job for some time.
Correct.
Apparently successfully.
Correct, Your Honor. She had been performing her job fairly successfully for some time. I would point this court to its very recent decision in Brown versus Austin, which was a Rehabilitation Act case. And in that case, very, very similarly to the allegations in this case, Mr. Brown was performing his job. He had received generally favorable evaluations up until the point that his anxiety condition rendered him unable to perform the essential functions of his job. You know, performance reviews, Dr. Post even provided sworn testimony about this. It's at appendix volume 2, page 269. He was asked in the administrative hearing that predated this whether having the performance reviews would have changed his opinion. And he explained that they wouldn't have. He found limited value in them. Even if those performance reviews are accurate, they're a snapshot in time. This case must be evaluated by sort of this 2 or 3 month period where Ms. Garcia was really struggling at work and failing to adequately perform the essential functions of her job, which led the department to order this fitness for duty evaluation. The bottom line, really, for the department's argument, which I believe is fairly well covered in the court's order and the briefing in this case, is that Garcia was employed in a very unique environment with a great deal of independence and personal responsibility. She was a nurse at a relatively rural satellite office, providing vital public health and outreach to a fairly small community. She worked largely alone and without frequent active supervision. The department's ability to trust that she was doing her job and taking care of patients according to best healthcare practices was paramount. Ms. Garcia breached this trust through a series of questionable actions and incidents over a short period, leading the Department of Health to place her on administrative leave pending the fitness for duty evaluation. As has been thoroughly discussed, the fitness for duty evaluation identified several areas, several essential functions, which Ms. Garcia could not perform. Ms. Garcia conceded, as the court identified, that she was having certain problems that were impacting her ability to complete her job. And the court identified that in its individualized assessment of this case, applying the facts available to the relevant law. The bottom line is there hasn't been any evidence presented that establishes that the department's decisions, that Mr. Forslund's decision was pretextual. And for that reason, Ms. Garcia cannot carry her burden under the McDonnell-Douglas test. And this, the district court's decision must be affirmed. I'll waive the remainder of my time unless there's...
Mr. Howard, I had a question for you about the accommodation issue. Why didn't the department attempt to respond to her accommodation request before placing her on leave?
The decision to place her on administrative leave, as I believe is established in the affidavit of Crystal Skiles and the testimony of Matt Nix, was actually made prior to receiving her accommodation request. However,
she was placed on leave before
she was not. She was
before the request was received. Is that what the record shows?
Your Honor, the record shows that a decision was made to place her on leave prior to the receipt of the accommodation request. However, I would note that the accommodation request, we do agree with the district court that proceeding through that process would have been moot given that she was on administrative leave and was not in the office. But I would also point out that during this time, one of the problems they'd been having with Ms. Garcia was that she was shutting her door and it hadn't adequately resolved really the troubles she was having at work. However, that's a factual determination that the court really didn't get to after deciding that the issue was moot.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Howard. Appreciate your arguments. Was there some rebuttal time? No, Mr. Phelan went over. So, counsel, your time's expired. You're excused and the case shall be submitted.